back and better than ever. Thanks for tuning back into the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson. We are coming back to you after taking a little bit of time off. We had our coaching changes. We had even more conference realignment. And Tom Fornelli, my guest, once again today. Tom, it seems like if we had recorded anything last week, it would have been obsolete by the time I would have had it all cut up and uploaded to the servers.
Yeah, it was kind of moving pretty quickly with all the coaches being hired and the Big East dropping a bomb in the middle of itself, and the Catholics seceding for the basketball reasons, and everybody wondering what will happen with the football, at the same time wondering, why would anything happen with the football? They're all non-football schools leaving. Yeah, it's a crazy week.
Yeah, no, it's the kind of thing that you realize that in college football, you know, this is almost the time when, if you are a traditionalist, if you like things the way that they are, you're set in your ways, you're a routine man, you hate this time, because while the kids are taking exams, while the players are, and yet they do take exams, when the players are focusing back on their academics before the bowl season and bowl practices start, that's when the coaches and their agents are shopping. And now, within this new era of conference realignment, this is when the athletic directors and presidents start shopping. And so, you know, now it seems like everyone's a little bit nervous. And until we sort of go into our next quiet period, everybody seems to be on edge for the next big bombshell that's going to drop.
Yeah, it's the last few weeks is the quote-unquote dead period for just regular college football news, where it's like, you know, so-and-so's injured, blah, 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 this kid got arrested. That stuff dies for a few weeks, and it's all the backroom shady dealings going on now that you have to wait for them to emerge. But it's from once the bowls start, like they did on Saturday, it starts picking up again, and we'll probably be pretty good with actual news till about mid-February or March.
Yeah, until all the conferences' spring meetings, when they decide that, you know, some...
That's when the four supergroups will emerge and destroy us all. Of course, I mean, we've only got 4 days left, Chip. It's December 17th, 2012, so none of this stuff's ever going to happen.
Well, if the actually there is a report about details about the apocalypse, but it's coming from a West Virginia blogger, so you know who knows whether or not that's going to be true or not.
The apocalypse is going to join the ACC.
All right. Anyway, like you said, we do have football. We had the bowl season had the kind of kickoff that you hoped when you saw that it was going to be, you know, Chris Alt's Nevada team led by Cody Fajardo, Stephon Jefferson, you know, phenomenal offensive pair. Nevada was up and down. They had some disappointing losses, but you know there was at least enough firepower that we might have a shootout against Matt Scott, Arizona, Rich Rodriguez's offense. And Tom, it was certainly the final score was something that you might have expected. But along the way, I mean, what a comeback by Arizona.
Yeah, honestly, good luck to the rest of the bowl games this year trying to live up to the very first bowl game we had, because that game was insane with just from the way it started, the way it ended. Because Nevada jumped out to the 21-0 lead. Arizona looked like a team that didn't even want to be there. It was like, oh boy, we're in Albuquerque. What a reward. And, you know, I mean, they were fighting on the sidelines, for God's sake. Teammates were throwing punches on the sidelines. So it had all the makings of, oh, this is going to be a blowout. Then Arizona, you know, fought its way back in, tied, but then fell behind again late in the fourth. We're trailing by 13 with less than 2 minutes to play, came back in and won. It was, I mean, they had two drives in the last 60 seconds of the game to score two touchdowns. It was insane. It was awesome, and I hope there are more games just like it.
It was two short touchdown passes in the final 46 seconds from Matt Scott, who did end up collecting MVP honors and that New Mexico Bowl trophy. I mean, that looks like something I would find in my grandparents' house. You know, it's just like that vase with the nice little inscriptions on it.
It should have just been like a piece of wood in the shape of New Mexico. I mean, it'd be first of all, or it could have just been like a Gildan T-shirt.
Yeah, the sweatshirt that the guy goes back into the burning house for.
Like a long sleeve, like bright blue sweatshirt that just says New Mexico Bowl Champs in like iron on print. I think that would be the best trophy.
The Gildan, I had not seen a Gildan advertisement before that bowl game. And that's, I guess you could say, that is like a, for a lot of these sponsors, this will be the most concentration that you will see from, you know, Franklin American Mortgage or all these different sponsors. And that's almost like a game within the game. If you like watching the bowl games, this is sort of – it's interesting. You could sort of rank how these sponsors are. Like, do you have any favorite sponsors, especially when it comes to, like, their advertisements that they're rolling out?
Well, just from Saturday during the Potato Bowl, that talking potato thing that they had.
The Spud Center?
That thing was terrifying. It scared the living. I was like hiding behind my chair. It was scaring the hell out of me, whatever the hell. It was a talking potato chip. Potatoes aren't supposed to talk.
It wasn't.
They have ears, not mouths.
It was not a talking potato chip, but it was a talking potato. Famous Idaho Potato is going to bring the heat. It'll get a little interesting, especially for some of these bowls where, you know, I have not seen a Gildan advertisement or a Famous Idaho Potato advertisement. I don't see them 364 days of the year. And then whenever the bowl game comes, I'm like, man, these are really creepy advertisements.
Yeah, I look forward to the Beef O'Brady's commercials during the Beef O'Brady's Bowl, because I remember them last year and just watching them, thinking that everything that they showed in that commercial looked like, you know, death on a plate.
Yeah.
Because it was like, these commercials are doing nothing to make me want to eat at your establishment, kind sirs. Please take them off my television. But I guarantee you there'll be 40 of them during the game again this year.
Yeah, exactly. Because, they're sponsoring the game. They bought up all the time. You know, I understand the hustle. I understand how it goes. Going back to that Potato Bowl, how surprised were you with the way that Utah State ran away with it? I didn't get a chance. I did not get a chance to see the final score. It was still, Toledo was still hanging around as much as they could without their quarterback, running back, and star linebacker, at least until the third quarter or so. And then all of a sudden I come back, and, man, Utah State, behind, big day from Williams, I think over 200 yards rushing, and they just seemed to pound Toledo late.
Yeah, I was actually more surprised that Toledo hung around as long as it did, considering the injuries that they had. But it was, yeah, I wouldn't call it a good game, but I mean, it was a competitive game until, yeah, there was a field goal with like 7.5 minutes left, halfway through the fourth quarter, that Toledo kicked to make it a 13-9 game. Then in the final 7 minutes, Utah State reels off 4 touchdowns, and it was a blowout, but it really wasn't a blowout, because it was a lot closer than that until the final 7 minutes of the game, when Kerwin Williams just went off. Like you said, he finished with 235 yards and 3 touchdowns, and all 3 of those touchdowns came in that 3-minute span in the fourth quarter. So Toledo hung around, but I think, yeah, at the end, it was just, you know, they hung around as long as they could, and then they just finally broke, and Utah State made it look like a much bigger blowout than it actually was.
What was your favorite individual performance of between the two games?
There are so many performances to enjoy in that Nevada-Arizona game. The least favorite performance would be both those defenses. Although, at least the defenses threw punches on the sidelines. That might be my favorite performance, actually, because that made for good viewing. But Chucky Keaton, I just have like a bit of a crush on Chucky Keaton. So he broke off that 62-yard run in the first quarter. It was just like, you know, yay, I wanted to see that, because Chucky Keaton's one of my favorite players to watch. And he had over 300 yards, although he only had the one touchdown run, and Kerwin Williams scored all 3 other touchdowns. But I just like Chucky Keaton very much, so I'm going to pick Chucky.
Hey, Chucky Keaton, that's like, that goes on that list of college football players that just have awesome names.
He's the new Colin Kaepernick to me, where he'll be starting for an NFL team in a couple of years, and everybody will be like, where the hell did this kid come from? And he'll be like, dude, I'm a hipster Keaton fan. I've been watching him for years.
Yeah, watching the San Francisco 49ers lineup, I think Dan Rubenstein, SB Nation, tweeted this. He said, you know, for like the indie hipster college football fan, seeing Colin Kaepernick and LaMichael James in the same backfield running like a crazy pistol offense is just like 2010's all-star team or something like that.
Yeah, it's nice to see that the NFL is actually slowly starting to adapt to the talent that the colleges are giving them.
Well, speaking of exchanging talent and back and forth, let's transition right on there into the coaching. The silly season is finally winding down, and you know, we've We had the bombshell that was Bielema departing to Arkansas. We had a few other moving pieces. We've got Tommy Tuberville darting for the door to get to Cincinnati. Cliff Kingsbury comes to Texas Tech. There's lots of pieces have shifted. And, you know, you've got your Charlie Strongs, the coaches that were courted, your Mike Gundys that have decided to stay. So those fan bases seem a little calmed right now. Let's go to get started with a little bit broad question for you, Mr. Fornelli. What was your favorite hire? I mean, this can be fit. This can be, intrigue, anything. What was, of all the changes, what was your favorite hire of the silly season thus far?
I actually have a couple favorites. It's hard. I love the Cliff Kingsbury hiring at Texas Tech just because it makes all the sense in the world. He's a very hot prospect as far as coaches are concerned. He's an up and comer. He's probably going to be pretty good. We saw what he did with the offense at Texas A&M and what he's learned under Sumlin and company in his years. I mean, he was a quality control assistant 3 years ago, and yeah. Now he's head coach at Texas Tech. So it's obvious he knows what he's doing to climb that fast. And then just plus because his personality, I think, he's one of those coaches. It's one of the things that make college football great is that the coaches that have that kind of personality that stands out will be able to watch him slapping his players and coaches' asses all year long in Lubbock next year. So they're lighting up scoreboards. So I like that for the fix. I think it's the Tommy Tuberville hiring at Texas Tech never made sense to me because what Texas Tech did to get itself on the map to make it actually successful under Mike Leach, which, airing it out, playing, the high potent offense. And Tuberville came and he was kind of bringing that, he kept the offense, but he was more known for his, winning defensively 3-2 games while at Auburn. So I think that Texas Tech with Kingsbury is getting back to where it wants to be. My other favorite hiring was just Western Kentucky hiring Petrino because I think I'm shocked that Petrino didn't get a bigger job. I mean, I didn't think the whole Jessica Doral motorcycle thing was going to affect him that much. I figured somebody was going to make an offer to him. But I think Western Kentucky just did a home run with the hiring because if I read it right, he's making $850,000 next year, but his buyout, if he leaves after a year, is $1.3 million or something in that area. So if he's only there for a year and leaves,
they actually
make money off the deal.
Yeah,
and if he's there for more than 1 year and he stays for a couple of years, well, then they're going to be a very good program. So, yeah. I mean, it's win-win for them. So I think that's a great hire, although I don't expect Petrino to be there very long.
Yeah, I was asked a bunch last week when you were setting over-unders on how long he will be at Western Kentucky. And if it goes a full 12 months on the calendar, if we make it back to December 12th or whatever the day was, I'll be pretty shocked. But like you said, it's a good deal for Western Kentucky, particularly when you think about how far Willie Taggart was able to bring that program before he went home to the USF. And he had a team of he had recruited those guys. He brought the talent level up. And Western Kentucky's come so far from being sort of the laughingstock of college football so quickly, you don't want to fall right back there. So you bring in somebody who's at least going to keep the attention and the excitement and just keep a little bit of momentum going as far as, a proven offensive mind, a proven offensive coach. You've got the name recognition. There'll be some attention. And what Western Kentucky plays against, they've got the Kentucky game, right? And they got a couple SEC opponents on the schedule, I think. Crap, I don't have it in front of me.
They got Kentucky and Tennessee, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they'll have plenty of opportunities to, continue to stay on the map with Petrino right there.
It would be kind of hilarious next year if, after Kentucky and both Tennessee both passed on Petrino and hired, Butch Jones and Mark Stoops, which are good hires in their own right. But it would be very funny next year if Western Kentucky beats both of them with Petrino.
Oh, yeah. it could. I mean, Arkansas, Western Kentucky did beat Kentucky this past year. So.
I wouldn't be shocked if it happens. I just think it'd be kind of poetic. I mean, not if you're a Vols or a Wildcats fan, but it would just, as an outside observer, it would be hilarious.
What was your read on, or where are you thinking the current Wisconsin coaching search is? Obviously, Barry Alvarez on Monday, you wrote a little bit about his don't panic message to the Badgers fan base. He will be coaching the Rose Bowl. Is it almost like a tired question to say, is there any chance he decides to keep it for one more year?
Knowing Barry Alvarez, I mean, I'm not surprised at all that he admitted it. I'm not surprised he's considered it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's who Barry Alvarez is. But I really don't see it happening. I mean, it's been so long. I mean, he retired, 7 years ago he stepped down. And there was a reason he did it then. And now he's 7 years older. I don't think, I understand, coaches sometimes will take a year off when they're getting, older. But you don't take 7 years off and then decide you really want to go through that day by day again. So, no, I don't think Alvarez, there's any real chance he's going to do it. But that being said, I mean, he says there's no reason to panic, and you're right. It's only been 10, 11 days since Bielsa made the decision, and that's not a lot of time to really conduct a coaching search. But at this point in the game, with so many of the major openings being filled and so many, the quote-unquote contenders for jobs, taking jobs, there's not much left in the cupboard for him to choose from at this point unless he's going to do to another school what Arkansas did to him.
Yeah, I'm also – You look at being able to give a head coach the time to fill out a staff. The members of the current Wisconsin staff, a couple of them are being hired by Dave Doran, who recently hired by NC State. You've got to be able to give a head coach the time to assemble the staff. You've got to make sure that you make all these moves before everybody, like you said, has their feet in the ground and they're comfortable in their new home. They've already got their plans set for next year. I guess from here, it seems to me the way that he shot down the Paul Christ from the option of getting him from the very beginning by saying Paul's going to stay at Pittsburgh, I wouldn't want to do that to them. And it seems almost in his head like Paul Christ is the guy, just not yet. Like, we're going to let Paul go and get his, figure out this head coaching thing at Pittsburgh for a couple seasons. And it's almost like in the long-term plan, all that they're really going for right now is like a 3 to 4 year coach.
I think that he came out quick and said Christ wasn't a candidate, but I think Christ was a candidate because there are other comments he made on Sunday that I can't think exactly what they said. They kind of intimated that there were a couple coaches that he'd approached that were likely candidates. He said he had a short list, but he had to take some names off that short list. And when he said that, I think he was referring to Christ. I think he did reach out and contact him, but Christ said, no, I'm going to stay here. That's the other thing, too, because you think about, there's been so much consistency in that program since Alvarez originally took it over. And a lot of people don't remember that Wisconsin football program was nothing special before Alvarez got there. And he built it up to what it is, and when he stepped down, he appointed his own successor, basically, in Bielema, who had been an assistant on that staff. So the consistency has been in Madison all these years, and that's why Wisconsin's consistently been good. But like you said, with all the assistants that are currently leaving, and that's one of the reasons Bielema left, is because he said Wisconsin's just not giving the money to keep the assistants. But with all these guys leaving and looking at it, it's Wisconsin, there could be, if depending on who the hire is, it could get rough over the next few years because Wisconsin has not been a perennial power before Alvarez got there.
Yeah. No, that's certainly, and especially in a Big Ten that is undergoing a lot of transition from Bill O'Brien at Penn State, Urban Meyer at Ohio State. You've got that division, Brady Hoke, still sort of getting going. Northwestern all of a sudden is becoming a 7 to 8 win team. Wisconsin could find themselves sort of trickling down in the program power rankings of that conference if they're not careful.
It was when that news broke that the Alabama left for Arkansas, it was good news for everybody besides Ohio State and Michigan, who are always at the top, and Penn State benefits from it too. But from the smaller, quote-unquote, schools of the Big Ten, when the Alabama left, it was good news for them because Wisconsin is more vulnerable now than it's been in about 15 to 20 years.
Scary stuff. All right, well, let's look ahead. We got more bowl games coming up, 3 games ahead this weekend. We will be running back the picks podcast later in the week, but just as an early thing, let's sort of want to pick your brain about some of the things you're looking forward to seeing. We got Thursday, BYU and San Diego State. Friday, Central Florida and Ball State, and then a doubleheader on Saturday, East Carolina and Louisiana Lafayette in the New Orleans Bowl, and then Boise State and Washington in the Las Vegas Bowl. In any one of those that you're are particularly looking forward to, and any reason why?
Well, Thursday's game between BYU and San Diego State, the Poinsettia Bowl, it interests me, although it's pretty much just a home game for San Diego State.
But yeah.
So there's kind of that disadvantage to BYU there. But it's kind of a classic matchup between the San Diego State offense that I think is top 20 in the nation in rushing. It's a good rushing attack versus the BYU defense that's ranked second in the nation in rushing defense. So as far as just the matchup there, that's going to be interesting for me to watch. It's just San Diego State rushing attack versus the BYU defense. And the other game of those four that I'm looking forward to is not UCF Ball State, because to be honest, I have absolutely no interest in that game, even if it is Maction. But the Boise State Washington game interests me because Boise State, you know, it's a good team, but like we've talked about, you, me, and Cherry on other podcasts have discussed, I don't think it's as good of a team as it's ranked this year. I think, oddly enough, that Boise State, of all places, is getting like the Texas-Michigan treatment where it's getting rated higher just based on history.
Right.
And, you know, just based on what we saw with them losing to Michigan State against the opening year, and it's playing a Washington team that is considered the underdog, but Washington team, mind you, that has beaten Stanford and Oregon State this season. So I think this will probably be, since the first game of the year against Michigan State, this will probably be the biggest, I'd say, litmus test of how good Boise State really is this year. Because I picked Washington to win. I think Washington is the better team.
I'm going to pile on both of those because, first of all, I watched Central Florida in the Conference USA championship game, and they made so many errors. I don't think I want to watch them again. Did not draft that in our bowl draft and might not watch that game. ECU, Louisiana Lafayette, I'll pay attention. But like you said, BYU, San Diego State finished the season very, very well. They turned it around. They beat Boise State in that finish to be able to earn a share of the Mountain West title on their way out of the conference. And just sort of even though we don't know what the future of the Big East is going to bring, I think that regardless of what happens, San Diego State right now, especially Rocky Long, you know, just still kind of getting going with that program, they are going to be, whether it's the Big East, the Mountain West, you know, if you want to look at the top, you know, 10 or so programs in the group of five for the future as far as those five, you know, lower tier conferences, if they're going to be able to, you know, get out and sort of lead the pack on that and be a contender for one of those at-large spots, things like winning a home game bowl game in the Poinsettia Bowl need to happen, you know. And BYU is a very, very good team. Like you said, one of the best defenses in the country. I think it's a great opportunity for the Aztecs. And then Boise State, Washington, like you said, will also be a test of the Chris Peterson prepares well, you know, you give Chris Peterson more than 10 days to prepare. He's only got like two losses or something like that. And I agree with you. This will test that theory because this Washington team is very, very capable of beating Boise State.
You know what else I realized while you were talking there is of these four games this week, four of the teams are going to be in the Big East.
Oh, yeah.
San Diego State, UCF, ECU, and Boise. And hell, maybe BYU joins them at some point in the future.
Who knows?
This is the Big East, big weekend as far as bowl games are going.
And somebody would take so much joy in the fact that the Big East, big bowl weekend takes place December 20th through 22nd. that's better than...
The Big East is going to win, like, the first two games the world's going to edge because it just doesn't want to deal with it anymore. It's going to fling itself off the universe like ledge into the abyss.
Have you seen those like photoshopped weather, like 5-day weather, like when you pull up your app for the weather, like the 5-day forecast? And it's just like, it'll, you know, say whatever your temperature is. And then on the 21st, it says it's like 666 degrees with just like fire and brimstone as the logo.
No, I have not seen that yet, but that's exactly what's going to happen. The reckoning is coming.
Anyway, my thanks to Tom Fornelli for joining me once again on the podcast. Remember, you can get all the CBSSports.com college football podcasts by subscribing on iTunes. We will deliver them to you free of charge. Stick around for the rest of the week. We got more breakdowns, more conference realignment, and of course, the weekend picks panel back in action. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson.